You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey Sports presents Big Time Baseball with former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr. and Odyssey insider Cody Decker.
Welcome back to another week here in Major League Baseball. You are listening to Big Time Baseball for here for Odyssey Sports. I'm Cody Decker, former professional baseball player turned professional smartass on the radio. And most importantly, with me, as always, the single greatest human being who has ever lived in Major League Baseball history. He is Tony Gwynn Jr. Tony, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, Cody. How about yourself, man? This whole playoff thing starting to heat up, my man.
It's going in such crazy directions and utter chaos, really. We've talked about chaos lately, and you know, it's almost like Major League Baseball. You have a pretty good idea going into September what the playoff picture is going to look like. And yeah, we know what it looks like at the top of the divisions, but the wild cards are just that. They are wild as hell right now, both in the AL and the NL. Teams coming out of the woodwork, teams that I've been telling people to pay attention to for so long, and now finally people have no choice but to pay attention because a lot of other teams faltering. But before we get to the wild cards, we got to talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame inductions yesterday. Three new members of the Hall. Pretty cool. Good speeches. Of course, obviously, Larry Walker and, of course, Derek Jeter. But your guy, Ted Simmons, dude, has maybe the single greatest voice of any human being that's ever lived. I felt like I was being bathed in dark chocolate just slowly, but delightfully.
Now, Ted does have a very soulful voice. And one of the, if not the smartest baseball mind I've ever had the privilege of being around. He was my bench coach for 2 years, once in Milwaukee in 08, and then in 09, he was the bench coach in San Diego. He is a very playful guy at times, but also a very serious individual. And you kind of got a taste of that during his speech. Like he is, which I think you called him Morgan Freeman.
Yes, he definitely's got a little Morgan Freeman. But here's my direct, and I think I really got this down. I think I nailed him. I think with the looks, he's got the exact identical looks of Steve Coogan and the voice of a middle-aged Rick Dees.
Okay. Yeah. The first gentleman's an actor, right?
If I'm not mistaken, an actor. British actor. If you Google him, it's the spitting image. It's frightening, in fact.
I actually saw a picture. He's an older version. So it's a pretty good comp. But yeah, man, he's glad to see both him, obviously Derek, Larry Walker, all get in there, and I mean, I got to see Larry Walker play. Obviously, we all got to see Derek Jeter play. Those two guys were, especially for me, Larry Walker, I got to see a lot of him. Him and my dad went up a few times in the for the batting title. He was just one of those freaks of nature. I love the story he told. And, you know, a lot of people, I think Mark Grant, who was the TV analyst for us here in San Diego, was telling us the story about Larry Walker in a bar, one of the minor league spots, the same story he told yesterday, where ball hit, line drive, he goes back to the base, but he cuts across the field and couldn't understand, you know, why he was called out after beating the throw. A lot of people don't believe that story, and I thought it was hilarious that he actually told it for part of his Hall of Fame speech.
You know what's more amazing than that? On top of that, it's funny he's told that story, not the other story, which I think he's better known for. But the fun fact, when he was on the Montreal Expos, he played a game at Dodger Stadium where he handed the ball off.
Oh, yes, I remember this.
I was at the game. I was like 7 years old. I was sitting there in the stands wondering why Jose Offerman was going first to third on a fly ball routine to right field. It was madness. No one understood what was going on. And I remember seeing
He went back and got the ball from the kid.
Got the ball, threw it in. I'm like, and he did mention something in his speech last night that finally it all clicked for me. Because he said, I never really played more than like 30 games a year until I was 16. Hockey was first, and then I became a baseball player kind of at 17 on. I'm like, that's why he didn't know the rules. Oh. Now it makes sense.
It makes sense why he cut, instead of retouching the bases, just took a beeline back to the base. Could you imagine seeing that in real life? I think I would fall on the floor laughing.
And watching the guy get furious after, it had to be the greatest thing ever. I mean, I was a Larry Walker fan. I mean, as a kid, now you mentioned how your dad and he both always went after the batting title. I remember when I was a little kid, me and my next door neighbors, they were twins. We played baseball. We were the same age. We always played basically backyard baseball with tennis balls. And the rule was we could never hit with our normal side hand. I couldn't hit right-handed. So we would always pick full on left-handed teams. And I remember I always hit and do impressions of Larry Walker and Ray Langford. And the only reason I didn't get Tony Gwynn is because my other friend picked him first.
So you had two completely different stands, like standing straight up Ray Langford. And then you had to kind of spread out Larry Walker, man. I mean, go back and look at some of his numbers, man. He put up some crazy home run RBI totals in the same year. And that was really before getting to Colorado. Once he got to Colorado, they went up even more. And like I said, it was good to see him. Obviously, Jeter, I don't think anybody had any doubt Jeter was going to be. And he gave a shout out to all who helped him get in, including the one guy who didn't vote for him. Now, it was supposed to be, those were supposed to be public. Then they kind of went back on it and said, nah, we won't necessarily do it that way. I would like to know who the one guy who said that he shouldn't be a Hall of Famer is.
I will never understand it for the rest of my life. There's certain people who are voting for the Hall of Fame that I feel like, just for certain actions, I don't care if it's for protest or whatever, you shouldn't be allowed to vote, because Derek Jeter is unanimous.
There's no doubt.
Is just unanimous, not even question. Like, to me, I almost started losing my faith in people when Trevor Hoffman wasn't the first ballot guy. Like, Trevor Hoffman deserves his own wing, let alone be in the Hall of Fame.
That whole can't get in on the first ballot thing is one of the most ridiculous things by all measurements that I think we experience in sports. Like, the whole idea that you can't get in on the first ballot basically is so mind-blowing to me. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, the thought was if they made it public, you'd get rid of that. And the one year they did get rid of it, right? I think Mariano Rivera went in without anybody, you know, confronting it because they knew they'd be exposed. Now that they've kind of gone back under dark again, we're seeing the whole can't get in on first ballot thing.
Listen, growing up in my math classes, I had to show my work. So I think these writers should show their work too. It's only fair.
Yeah.
It's only fair. Yeah, no. And I truly don't get it. And listen, I like the Hall of Fame to a point. I think it's a great museum. I think it's become too much of an arguing topic at this point. Guy, who should get in and why shouldn't they get in? I'm like, oh, come on. Like, Barry Bonds should be in. The end. Roger Clemens should be in. The end. I don't understand why there's even a debate at this point. But that's been my problem with the Hall of Fame. It's become this endless debatable talking point instead of what it should be. It should just be a museum honoring the game that we all love.
Yeah, no, you're right. And part of the reason I think the argument part has kicked up, I know, look where we've dragged ourselves into. I think part of the reason where the argument part comes is because the game has changed so much, right? And it's kind of changed what, because basically, if we were going by the old standards, you know, there'd be like almost nobody getting in. You know what I'm saying? Like, we've kind of adjusted to now where more of the you get on a 10-year run and you're the best, you know, in your spot during that time, That's sufficient enough to get in. There was a time where you had to have the longevity, you had to have certain specific numbers. And I don't think, because I think because of the way the game is played now, I don't know that anybody's ever really going to get to that. Trout might be one of the last few that get to those type of numbers. And it'll be based on the pace he's doing it, and I think he'll play a long time.
Yeah, and I mean, we talk about it all the time. Like, if you were to say right out the gate, in your head right now, who's having the best year of any catcher in Major League Baseball, who would you say it is? Because to me, it's only two names. And one name is kind of glaring because of a monster year he's having. The other is glaring for a different reason. To me, it's Salvador Perez and Yasmani Grandal. But if you put their numbers next to each other, you know, old school numbers, you're like, oh yeah, Salvi's having the better year. But if you do a little more digging, you see that what Yasmani Grandal is doing right now has like never been done before.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that is exactly why we have the arguments now, because there are, we have now numbers where you dig a little bit deeper and Yaz's year looks just as credible as Perez's does. You look at, but then you have the old school side. So that's, I think ultimately what we're saying is, you know, although it's become an argument, you know, between who should get and who shouldn't, I think that's going to be the case until we really settle in into this era that we're in now. I don't think it's quite settled, right? I mean, we've moved into it. We're all getting used to it. And I think eventually it'll be the norm, right? And then these arguments become a little bit easier because everybody's kind of working from the same playbook. But right now, that's not the case. You're right. Perez is having a monster year. No, by all measurements. Yaz's, you got to dig a little bit deeper to see, but nevertheless, it's still helping that ball club be where they're at right now.
Yes, it is. And it's been, if nothing else, both these guys have been a lot of fun. But it's just like you said, we probably have to wait until we really ease into this current era we're in, till we really start seeing the brilliance that's actually on the field right now.
Right.
But let's get over to something else that's taking place. And that is the chaos in Major League Baseball regarding both wild cards. Because let's start with the AL, because the AL seemed like it was going to be the wild card scenario that was going to be the more of a lock, quote unquote, because right. we had the Boston Red Sox. They were up by quite a bit at one point. You know, it was looking like the A's were going to get that second spot. They were up by quite a bit at one point. And then after the trade deadline, you know, the A's made crazy moves to where you're like, man, they're not going to be beaten at all. And they absolutely stumbled out of the gate after the All-Star break. Looking at what's going on now, right now at the top spot, Boston up a half game on the New York Yankees, who have absolutely fallen off, not to mention Gerrit Cole coming out of the game early the other day in the fourth, which I don't know about you, but my heart legitimately skipped a beat thinking about that. And you got Toronto, a team that I've been really, really on for a while, thinking that they're going to make a push, finally making their push, only a game and a half out behind the Yankees, and they got one more against New York today. I think this is going to be a very interesting race down the road, specifically with Toronto. I know that the Mariners are still in there, but I'm not expecting much out of the Mariners.
Listen, here's the thing, is we keep saying that about the Mariners, and they keep getting closer and closer.
That's true.
Two and a half out of that second wild card spot. Toronto's a game ahead of them. Oakland has slipped, which is the most surprising part of all of this. They slipped the three games out of the wild card entirely. So listen, the American League, National League resemble each other so much. They're both about a five-team race with teams with legitimate chances. And on the National League side, there's some schedule advantages certain ways. But you're right, the American League wild card, I didn't think we'd be having this conversation. I didn't think we'd be having it with the two teams that are actually leading right now. Honestly, I thought maybe Boston would be in there, but it certainly seemed like Oakland had that other spot. Now all of a sudden, the Yankees surge. Now they've lost they've lost eight of their last 10, five straight. Toronto, as you mentioned, they've won seven straight. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They're starting to play well. This one's a coin flip to me. I think this one's even more of a coin flip because I can envision a scenario where any one of the five teams gets in. I can see Oakland getting in. I can now start to see Seattle finding a way to get in. I really can. They're playing because they're not just, you know, winning games against, you know, scrub teams. They've had to beat Houston. They've taken out some of the better teams in the American League here as of in recent weeks. I don't see a reason why they can't win it. So there's a scenario in which I can see all any one of these five teams getting in. Certainly Toronto's surging right now. And to me, other than them, it's Seattle that's playing the best baseball out of the five.
I agree, and I'm a big fan of this Toronto team. I also think they're 1 year away really from really taking that next major step to really competing with like the Tampa Bay Rays in that division. But like you mentioned, 9-1 in their last 10, they have been exciting. Robbie Ray has really put himself not just in the Cy Young mix, but potentially could legitimately in this month overtake the Rays from Cole and Lynn, because Lynn's still on the IL. Cole pulled out early. We were expecting him to get at least four more starts this month. We don't know if we're getting that. Robbie Ray's healthy and he just can't stop from K-ing 15 guys a game. So this is going to be very interesting.
Not only that, this dude is, every time he starts, the price tag seems to go up because he's a free agent at the end of this year. And it'll be interesting, can they bring both him and Semien back, because they're both on one-year deals, both having monster seasons. And I think it'll be big to what you were talking about in terms of them taking that next step the following year. They get those two guys back, they're well on their way to making that step. But the problem is Robbie Ray is finally hitting the potential that I think everybody saw him as a Diamondback that he could get to. And if, you know, he's doing it at the right time, because I don't care what the new collective bargain agreement is going to have, he's going to get paid one way or the other.
No matter what, a team is going to pay him so much money,
which might not bode well for Toronto, because that means they're going. I mean, this price tag is going to, somebody's going to pay him. I'm betting, you know, over $100 million. I think he's going to get it.
I think so too. And you better believe that the San Francisco Giants got a lot of money lying around. Can you imagine adding a Robbie Ray to that staff?
If you're getting this Robbie Ray, yeah, I could definitely see you adding it to the staff.
Whew, be nasty. But let's switch it over to the National League side. Speaking of the Giants, they won their 90th game yesterday. First team to 90, which is incredible considering the fact the Dodgers have not been playing bad baseball and have somehow fallen two games behind the San Francisco Giants. Now, the Dodgers got the first wild card spot by 13.5 games. But here is what's interesting. That second wild card spot, where the AL right now, the wild card spots are all bunched within three games, from the top spot to the third place team that's hunting the wild card spot. In the NL, a bit different. Of course, the Dodgers up 13.5 on the San Diego Padres. But right now, the Padres got that second spot. They're up one game on the Cincinnati Reds, up three games on the Philadelphia Phillies, 3.5 on the St. Louis Cardinals. And I know we love to make fun of them because it's super, super, super easy.
They're right in there, though. Yeah.
But somehow, I'm assuming witchcraft, the Mets are only 4.5 out of this.
It had a chance to be 3.5. Had they not been a...
What's incredible, Tony, is they have won 7 of their last 10. It feels like they've lost their last 20.
Yeah. No,
that's
I mean,
how it feels.
First, let's address the elephant in the room. Mr. Diaz just continues to blow my mind with the whole pointing up. He's not pointing up even at fly balls anymore. The walk-off winner, was it De La Cruz who hit that ball?
It was De La Cruz, and boy, that we can unpack this one moment of baseball for hours. I mean, but let's just start with our massive pet peeve. I agree. Edwin Diaz, once again, pointing at a ball that ended a ball game for him.
Well, here's the thing. You know, the whole objective of the point is on fly balls to help your infielder or outfielder find the baseball. This was a ball that damn near knocked the center field wall down. It was hit so hard on the line. I mean, had the outfielder been there, he could have just jumped and caught it. Like, this wasn't a fly ball. Are we going to now start pointing out ground balls too? Like, is this what we're doing now? I'm just saying.
It's amazing that he's got to stop. It's amazing, but it's specifically him that he does this, because every time he's done it, this is the third time this year he's pointed at a ball. Each time was for a walk-off for another team. Like, that's the weirdest thing. One was like a walk-off grand slam. The other was like another walk-off home run. This one was a walk-off line drive that was low enough that he possibly could have jumped and caught it if he timed it right. Like, it's madness. It's absolute madness. Why is he doing this? It is it's secondhand embarrassment is what I feel when I see a pitcher do this.
There, though, that is the perfect description. It's not that I'm embarrassed. I'm not even out there. You know what I'm saying? Like it's. I wonder what people are seeing when they see him point up in the sky. What are his teammates thinking? Sometimes
they have to. Do you think they think?
Oh, well, maybe I actually do have a shot to catch this ball.
At this point, it has to be like the signal that we lost because he only points up when someone else walks him off. Like everyone, it must be like Kevin Pillar just walks back to the dugout. That's what it must mean at this point. Because it's crazy.
In all seriousness, though, they since the whole thumbs down situation, they played pretty good baseball. They found a way, and they're right back in the thick of things. So not to get off track, but the Mets. The point was the Mets are in this thing, and they are one of the teams fighting for that second wild card spot.
Yeah, and it's also not out of the realm of possibility that they get that National League East, because keep in mind,
the Braves, what is going
on
in the East?
They only got 73 wins. It's terrible. No one can win. Not one team in the East yesterday. They all lost somehow, which is amazing, because I'm pretty sure one of them played each other, and I think both teams just lost. Like it's crazy.
I just when you think that everybody has their stuff together in the East, they show that they don't. I thought the Braves were going to run away with this. They haven't. Philly's still 2.5 back. Mets still four back. You're right. It's not out of the realm that the Mets could still win this thing. It's not out of the realm that the Phillies could win this thing. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It could still. We're back to the whole idea that we were at in what? I think May or June, where literally anybody can win this division out of those three. Miami's falling. Washington, Miami have finally fallen completely out after, kind of hanging there for a little bit. It's a three-team race in the East, and either three teams could walk away, and I'd be like, oh, that's not a surprise.
Yeah, I completely agree. But that's just amazing because none of the teams are technically all that good. It's just a crazy thing that we're watching in baseball right now. And on paper, each team is great. But they've just underperformed all season. And, you know, it's like parody in the worst way. Like, who wants it the least in the East is like the question I'm basically asking myself every day. But, you know, looking at this team, but looking at who's at the top of that wild card spot is the San Diego Padres, a team that means a lot to both you and I. The question is, you mentioned earlier record, upcoming schedules. The Reds got a pretty easy schedule going forward where the Padres have one of the hardest. They got another series against the Dodgers coming up here. They got another series against the Giants coming up here. This is a team that's got a hell of a road to make this playoff, and they have to beat these teams to get in. The question is, what can this team do to, you know, not lose any more ground? They've had so many injuries on the mound, both on the bullpen side and the starting staff side. They haven't really hit well as of late. It seems like the entire city of San Diego is completely turned on Eric Hosmer. It's just, it seems like a really interesting time for the Padres right now.
Yeah, no, all of that is true. Although I think lately starting pitching starting to come around. The health has returned. You've seen quality starts, I think, in four out of the last five, may even be in five of the last five, where guys have given innings. They haven't necessarily won. I mean, Blake Snell had a perfect game through seven. Padres end up losing that game 4-0. So offense has been inconsistent, but they do seem to be, at least in my from my viewpoint, playing a better brand of baseball. Here's what we've learned about the schedule, because the schedule – started like this at the beginning of this month. And what we've learned here early is that you still got to play these games because the Reds have an easy schedule. They lost 2 or 3 to the Marlins. They lost 2 or 3 to Detroit, who, by the way, is not having a horrible year like everybody thought, but there's certainly a team the Reds should be beating. They're 3-7 in their last 10. And so they've had a chance to kind of put some separation between them and the Padres. They weren't able to do so. Padres end up getting the victory last night. They lose on a walk-off. So the Padres are one game up, but they are going into they don't play a team from this point on that isn't above 500, isn't in playoff contention.
Yeah.
They have the Giants, or excuse me, they got the Dodgers in this order. Dodgers, Giants, Cardinals, Braves, Dodgers, Giants. That's how they end the season right there. So they've shown they play their best baseball against those type of teams. They're going to have to do it in order to win this second wild card spot.
Yeah, and I'm excited for it. I think the city of San Diego deserves it. And you just got to understand fans out there. Petco Park, when that place is packed and the Padres are good, that is the most electric place on planet Earth. It is just so loud. So loud and so much fun. I'm really, really hoping the Padres can hold on to this. We're going to be staying well informed about the wild card, probably all the way to the final game of the season. Can't wait to see where this baseball season is going to take us. But one more thing we got to talk about before we wrap it up. Let's talk a little bit about player spotlights, because we've always talked about for years. And, you know, when I think about the 90s and growing up, the first player that immediately comes to mind for me, without question, not even a second place, is Ken Griffey Jr. I just think of baseball as a kid. I think of a backwards hat with a teal bill hitting home runs off of the warehouse in Baltimore. I just think of that first.
Ken was the let the kids play version in the 90s.
Yeah. And it was cool. Like, he had his own video games, he had his own shoes. It was like he was a real star in Major League Baseball. And I feel like we haven't had that really since him. And, you know, there's been a lot of fingers pointing at Major League Baseball, organizations, the players themselves. And I think there's a fair amount of blame kind of be spread a decent amount all over the place. But looking at what Major League Baseball, the players that are in the game right now, not to mention the young stars that are playing right now. Pete Alonso, a guy, you know, he hit his 100th home run the other day. And it took him the second fewest amount of games in Major League Baseball history to do that. Like Fernando Tatis Jr., 22 years old, having a monster year. He's playing out of position in the outfield. He threw a ball 97 miles per hour on an outfield assist yesterday. He's the front runner for the NL MVP. Wander Franco tied Mickey Mantle for the longest on-base streak in AL history. The guy is 20. Like, is baseball actually finally going to turn a corner and create stars, because they have them?
You're right. There's a lot of kind of that blame to go around why we didn't really have that earlier. I think Griffey was that guy. Griffey maintained that. And I think what you have to really, you know, kind of pay attention to is Major League Baseball hasn't, I don't think, had a problem with having young stars. They've had a problem with sustaining those stars for, you know, the longevity of the career, whether it be injury or different, you know, things that have come up. You have to be able to promote your guys, right? And that's why I think this next collective bargaining agreement is going to be huge, because if they can get on the same page and really work together, both players and owners, they can make this thing in terms of getting viewership, getting people, new fan base, getting your stars out there. They could really, you know, make some headway in that if they work together. They just haven't been doing that. But you certainly have the young stars. I don't think this game has been, you know, as Major League Baseball has made the move to get younger, this is the first time that you can actually see a lot of young stars across baseball, and you see how talented they are. So the onus is on them, to keep playing at the level that they're playing at, and if not, becoming better as they keep growing. Because that's the thing about star power. Like, you can't remain the same. The thing about Griffey, the thing about Bonds, the thing about they kept getting better and better and better and better and better. And that will be on the players to do so. Now, as they do so, Major League Baseball has got to be able to get these guys out there. You got to get back to like the game of the week type style, where you're being able to feature these superstars going against one another. It just seems like the same message we've had for years and years and years, and that doesn't reach this new base. It just doesn't.
It's amazing. We just talked about those things that Wander Franco did, Fernando Tatis is doing, and not to mention obviously what Pete Alonso did. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit his 40th home run. This is only the second time in Major League history that a father-son duo have hit 40 home runs in a season. Oh, and by the way, Vladdy Jr. is only 22 years old.
Listen, I got to see Prince do that in Milwaukee when he became part of that duo with his father, Cecil. And now you're seeing Vlad Jr. do it in a major way in an MVP type season. Unfortunately, there's this guy, Shohei Ohtani, that's in the league that has kind of, you know, poured cold water on the year that he's had, although it's been a tremendous year. Do you feel like Vlad Jr. is getting the pub that he deserves right now? Like, there's enough media platform for Shohei to get his and Vlad Jr. to get his and both be blowing up at the same time. So we're right in the thick of it right now. And we're seeing in live time that, at least from our standpoint, that he's not getting, that they're not doing a good enough job getting that out there. We're not talking enough. And listen, Shohei is the story. I get it. I have no doubt he wins the MVP. Maybe unanimously, right? But that doesn't mean that you don't blow up Vlad Jr. Or are we wrong? I don't feel like he is getting the notoriety that he should.
I really don't feel like he's getting the notoriety he should. Like, this is a guy that's right in the top of every major category in Major League Baseball on a surging team that he's about to help make the playoffs right now. Man, I hope they can do something better with this. And like you mentioned, the CBA is going to be huge in this. And it's also whether or not can they get on the same page, because Major League Baseball going forward is going to make more money than it ever has by far, especially getting in kind of into the gambling sphere that all major sports are doing. So this is a real opportunity for both players and ownerships to get on the same page and understand what's good for one is good for the other and what's good for the game itself. And I truly, truly hope, I don't know if it's going to be this CBA, but I hope in the next couple, we can finally, finally put the past behind us and get to a better place where this game could be where it really, truly could and should be.
You look at the NBA and how well both of the sides work together, at least as far as I can remember, including my time in the league, it's never felt like they were in partnership with one another. You know, and I think that is the key. And listen, we can argue all night about why that is. You know, as a former player, I have
and there
my
are
opinions
reasons
of. Right. My
there
opinions
are reasons
of why that is. However, you got to find a way to get through that part. And because the game itself will only benefit from the two sides viewing each other as partners. And once you do that, I think the sky is the limit for the game, honestly.
I completely agree. And I truly, and it almost sounds like we're talking about peace and love throughout all of humanity, which in a way we kind of are. But it is possible, and I hope we can eventually get there. Guys, this has been an incredibly fun Big Time Baseball. Thank you so much for joining us here on Odyssey Sports. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe to Big Time Baseball wherever you get your favorite podcast. That's Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, you name it, we're there. Make sure you leave a comment and check us out next week. Of course, follow me on Twitter at Decker6 and Antihero Baseball on Instagram. Tony, where can people find you?
You can find me at Tony Gwynn Jr. on Twitter. You can find me at Tony_Gwynn Jr. on IG. Check me out on the Padres broadcast, 97.3 The Fan. You can also catch me on my radio talk show from 3 to 7 on Gwynn and Chris, also on the Odyssey Sports app. So check me out. Check Cody out. We'll check you next week.
Absolutely. And again, if you have not heard Tony Gwynn Jr. call a baseball game, you are missing out on pure gold. Go and listen to the pods. Make the playoffs with the soothing tones of Tony Gwynn Jr. Guys, that's it for Big Time Baseball. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back next week.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazon of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.